Welcome to Tech at Lunch, the podcast that satisfies your hunger for all things tech while you enjoy your midday meal. So grab your sandwich, tune in, and let's dig in.
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hey, I'm John.
And, you know, this week we don't have Ed with us. He's taking care of some family things. So, you know, we're going to kind of mosey on out without him. So, you know, this week, we're really going to get into something that's, you know, kind of on occasion, depending on what the 3D printer is, can kind of make you laugh, or it can make you wonder. You know, it's the unconventional 3D printers. So, you know, that's going to be the topic for this week, and that's something that we're going to get into. You know, we're start talking about unconventional 3D printers. We you know, it's everything from food to the binder jetting to, you know, your Vorons, if you want to talk about tabletop, you know, unconventional, you know, 3D printers. And, you know, pretty much really everything in between. So, you know, it's like, you know, as we move forward, things are going to get a little weird. So, John, what are you thinking?
It's the innovation, right? Like, innovation is going to start combining some technology together to make some things, to get to come up with some products that we've never really thought was possible before. So part of it is like, you get the makers or the inventors that are like, just because we've never had one, like, I'm going to make one. Not necessarily thinking about if it's like the best, most, a gift to humanity, you know, like making milk or bread or eggs and stuff, dairy and stuff like that. Was it's like they're trying stuff out just to see what would work, and then the other half of it is they've got a goal, they've got a topic that they want to address, whether it's sustainability, recycling, you know, getting your carbon footprint down, things like that, or it's just usefulness and sense of it's a utility print. You don't have rulers, you want to make quick prints, stuff like that. So those are kind of the two schools of thought. For me, it really depends on what I kind of firmly sit on the side of what am I trying to do and what is my end goal for the print. So the print is part of the process. It really makes a lot of sense for me. We talked a lot about binder jetting. We'll get a lot into that. I think it's the freshest in my mind, so I want to kind of touch on that first. But it's one of those things where we want to make things fast. The more people we have, the more resources we need, the more parts we need. If an item or product has a lot of tiny pieces or a lot of different pieces that all don't go all printed at the same time, if you were printing them with binder jetting, you can have a cycle continuously go through, kind of like how you know, pots would go through a kiln and things like that. It's very similar process of it gets molded with liquid binder and kind of goes through. But at the end of the day, it's one of those things where they want to rapidly produce. And when we say rapid, when we're talking about 3D printing, like, it's already a rapid process. It's already like you can change. You can say, hey, I don't like how that fits. You can print out a part that's smaller, just to like get an idea of what it looks like or how it prints, and then rapidly iterate. So, yeah, I don't know how much you know or have worked with binder jetting. It's very innovative, but it's very demanding, because the more parts you print, the faster you want to print them, the more work it's going to take to get your finished part, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I think the most experience I have with binder jetting is, you know, just we were rapid kind of seeing the output, and doing some research into it. Binder jetting, I guess you could say it's a weird duck, and not in a bad way, you know, that some people might think it is, but it's kind of, I guess you could say it's a jack of all trades, a master of none. When it comes down to the additive manufacturing space, because you can do ceramics, you can do metals, you can do all of these high temp, additives, and then pretty much you have to take it from there, shake the table out, and then put it into an easy bake oven. Bake the parts out and the kiln, and then your parts are finalized. However, to what I've seen and to what I've kind of read and stuff like that is, for binder jet, size matters. Or at some points doesn't matter, because it's however you want to build it, you can build it, and it's going to take it. Because it prints layer by layer by layer. And which to me is actually kind of cool, because if you think about it, if you stop a print on a binder jet midway and you're building a high flow combustion engine, or you're building something where you have to worry about airflow through, through chambers and stuff like that, and you want to see how it's printing, you can easily kill the print halfway through, remove the part, kiln fire it, just to see how the internal structure of those fuel passageways and passageways are actually taking effect. So I think, for my own, I guess you could say mental capacity, is that it's a very, when it comes down to, rapid prototyping, I'd say it's better for rapid engineering, because it does take a little bit of time. It does have, it's a multi-step process. Literally, if you think about it, it's a multi-day process. But it gives you a little bit more chances to be more, I guess you could say, involved, because you can stop and look at the print halfway through. If you want to take it out, freaking kiln fire it, test it, make sure it does what you want it to before you go the, the full party.
Yeah, I think that machine that we saw at Rapid though, they were working on, of course it needed a lot of power. They were working on, they got those drones printed pretty quickly. They said something about 3 minutes
Yeah, they
in and
were,
out.
yeah, they were definitely, going.
But that's not the normal
Oh no.
in the situation or in the process. So yeah, I mean it's definitely in my mind batch printing. You wouldn't go. If I have one part that I'm trying to make it do that with the binder jetting, you're probably gonna have a better time with powder bed fusion or wire arc, welder
Now,
rack.
I could see if, now I'm gonna agree with you, but I'm gonna throw this one out there. If you have one of these binder jet machines, and it's lay layer, then top layer, layer, the top layer. If you get a deep enough one, that you can actually, and this is, goes back to our 3D printing in space conversation, is if you can start printing combustion nozzles in powder bed fusion, because technically you can print titanium,
Yeah.
and you can print two or three if you have a wide enough base, and enough material, I guess. You can actually print your high flow combustion engines as far as nozzles and stuff like that, just with powder bed fusion before mating them to another surface.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's really cool. I mean there's so much you could do with it. I don't know. It makes me think about other types, right? So honestly, there's a lot of different directions you could take. Multiple heads, like switchable heads, things like that. Robot arms, right? What I don't know. What is the most interesting to you? Would you say?
Well, it depends on if it's from the comedic side or if it's from the actual, this is useful.
So you answer it from both sides.
I want to say the most comical one would probably have to be the chocolate 3D printer.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't make sense to me. I get it. We need it for people building cakes. But, if someone says, "Hey, look, I made a cart out of chocolate," I'm gonna kind of question that. It goes along the same side, I guess you could say, as, yeah, maybe the pancake bot.
You don't know that they got a TV show for this now. It's like,
What?
Is That Cake or something like that?
Seriously?
Everything looks, yeah, so you have contestants choosing if items are cake or real. Yeah, so this it's a real thing. I mean, I think it's hilarious,
Beat me to that one.
yeah.
And it's just, and I really think that, if you start talking about, the more interesting, weird, 3D printer that, I'm kind of, oohing on about, is your robot arm 3D printers, your six Dolph, your eight Dolph, 3D printers that utilize obsolete robot arms, like your ABBs, your KUKAs. But because the thing is with that, it's the definition of rep rap. It's the utter definition of I have what I need to build what I want. Because, you're taking something that was nothing or that was used in a different type of landscape, and you flipped it on its head, and now you're doing 3D printing and art with it. These robots are not designed to do 3D printing and art. They're designed to put together a car or move big heavy objects from one place to another. It's literally, pick it up and put it down. There's nothing fluid about these things.
I think they're kind of graceful sometimes. Depends on
Yeah,
who was training it.
that's there's the key. But it's like you actually watch them in motion, and I watch them 3D print. It's a different world. It's like that machine is not supposed to do that.
Right. It takes it takes the idea and turns it on its head. I can agree with this. I like the 3D printing like that because it's you think about what the human lacks in a process and what makes 3D printing like a human can weld, right? Just as well. I mean, there's some welders that can weld just as well as a robot can, but can they do it endlessly? I think
Right.
is the key here. So if we're able to like ship a like a robot arm and like a 3D a concrete like house builder or something like that and figure out a way to use the materials that we have on other planets and stuff like that, there's no doubt in my mind that we're building a city.
Oh yeah,
The limit
I
is
agree
just
with
the resources and how they hold withstand or withhold the environment, right?
And it's funny when you start really digging into the 3D printing side of the house with us talking about robots. Not a lot of other, printers out there can do six Dolph, eight Dolph, type of, but and when we say that, I mean degrees of freedom. Most robots are six to eight Dolph, 6 to 8 degrees of freedom. While your 3D printers are, what, four?
Yeah,
Not
and
even four?
you really gotta worry about how what your print orientation is when you have limited like angles of freedom. Like the more angles that you add, the easier it is for your print head to adjust and print something. Like you think about the 90-degree overhangs and stuff like that. A lot of this stuff's not possible if there's not extra degrees of freedom or angles of freedom, you know?
Yeah, it's the movement of the printhead, and the thing is in a typical 3D printer, if your printhead's moving, you have problems. And that, but the thing is I really think that that goes to, if we're going to take the more unconventional side of the house, as far as coming from, the robot arm is the pellet extruder. And I really think that, that on its own attached to the robot arm is, the theoretical, game changer when it comes down to speed, accuracy, and time. It's like what we were talking about earlier. It's, I can, there's videos out there on YouTube where there are people like walk up to it, hit a button and print a boat. Soon it's going to be, hey, let's go print a car. I wouldn't drive it, but hey, let's go print a car.
Right.
But it is one of those things. It's something that I have a feeling that as more locations give up their robots, well, not really give them up, but retire their robots for newer robots, we're going to see an increase in, I think, the amount of, utilization of these industrial robots to conduct
Like
additive
repurposed.
manufacturing. Right.
Yeah.
Have a,
Yeah, that
saving
makes sense.
grace. Now, when you think about this, what do you think of?
I mean, what, like repurposing them or
No,
like the.
the question. When you start thinking about unconventional, where are you
Oh,
going?
okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I like thinking about, I mean, honestly, the food printers are a cool thing. I know you're talking, you're thinking that they're hilarious. I think that it's something that we don't really think about. So it's cool for me to see somebody like having the idea to like say, "Hey, like how can I automate my making my breakfast?" Like if I was I'm not saying that this is the exact situation of how the pancake bot was created, but if I was like a hotel owner trying to offer a breakfast and compete with some of these bigger hotel brands, and I want to offer breakfast, like you can, of course you can have that same little Belgian waffle maker. You pour some of the stuff in, flip it, and then you have your waffle. Of course, fantastic. I'd eat it too. 10 out of 10. However, if I have something that can print like I don't know, ahead of the of Neil Armstrong or the moon itself, like on the Skittle there, like I think that that would be something that's pretty cool, and I would at least do it if put a few prints in just to see what I could get out of it and get it. So the novelty, the specialty prints, like the food, that makes sense to me. Like it's only a start in that kind of that realm. Like I know that there's going to be a bit of controversy around it, but people 3D printing meats or stuff like that. I'm not saying like they're creating meat, right? But you exactly how we made chicken nuggets. Like you can put it right in a syringe after you grind it up, and then you can have it extruded a certain way, right? So you can literally reshape things. However, it's not going to be like your steaks that we're used to, right?
Where do you think chicken fries came from?
Yeah, chicken fries. It's literally just reshaped chicken nuggets. I mean, listen, it's something that like it makes so much sense because it's so simple that certain people out would Or oh, they overlook it or be against it immediately, but I think that at a certain point, if you're trying to mass produce as well, if I can print them on the stove and then set it up in some type of automated process, then why wouldn't I?
Yeah, you can see that.
Yeah, and then you think about these. There's multifunction printers like I think X. What is the company? X Tool makes one that's like a it's a printer, laser engraver, and a CNC machine all in one.
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, it's all in one. It's one unit. It's a bulky giant unit, but it comes with a kind of an enclosure. But it's something that I don't know if they offer it anymore, but it's something like we saw as a weird printer, and it has so many different purposes. You switch out the tool head, but it's the same idea we talk about with the food printing. They switched out the tool head for a syringe. They switch out the hot or the bed for like a griddle, and boom, you have pancakes.
Yeah, thing is the X tool thing. I don't know if it's definitely not unconventional because now some other companies are offering laser engravers for their 3D printers.
Yeah, everybody wants to. I think they did it. They were one of the first I saw that were like a 3-in-1 unit for like desktop printing that the standard consumer can go and purchase. It was still a little pricey at like 1200 or it was like 1400 or something like that. But it's something that like if I instead of buying three machines, if I could just buy the one and it does all three things, why not?
Yeah, I was trying to sort of, I was double checking the name. I know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. But at the end of the day, that idea rings true for a lot of things. Like I can even think of the Prusa XL as a printer with multiple different tool heads that do quick exchanges. Now, granted, I wouldn't say that's the most unconventional because it's just using the Bowden tube process, but it duplicates it so many times and has those extra tool ends that it could like hot swap switch out. That's the only one that I've ever seen doing that.
Yeah, it's Snapmaker.
Snapmaker.
Modular 3D printer.
That's funny.
You know, but you're right. It's, you know, the you know, jack of all trades of printers. We're starting to see that again. So, the Prusa XL is, like you said, is definitely one that, you know, is a interesting printer all on its own.
Yeah, it's I mean, it has selective zones of heating as well for the bed. So I think that they just went with like a lot of focus on customization of the prints and kind of innovating or adding new, technologies to their print. I mean, Prusa is a game changer.
That they definitely answered the question that a lot of people had.
When will I
And
get it? No, I'm
that's
just
the
kidding.
bigger question. I don't think they still answered that full question yet.
No.
At least for the multi-headed Prusa XL. Single head, you can get those. Multi-head, yeah, might be waiting a little bit. But it's the, you know, how do I not use as much electricity to do a print if I don't need to? And if you think about it, it's just a great way to save, you know, your PSU, because
Right.
you're not having to fire up an entire bed. Like for me, with my Voron, I got a 350 by 350 by 350, and my thing, when it starts up, that darn heater unit has to heat the entire, you know, quarter inch thick piece of, you
You
know,
feel the
aluminum
whole
over
room
here.
temperature change.
Yeah, it does kind of bring you into the wonderful world of heat. Great for cold winter days.
There you go. Just
Yeah, just
turn
turn
your
your printer
printer
on.
off.
You know, I'm trying to heat on it to, you know, 200 and something degrees, and, you know, sit back and watch. You know, but, you know, would Prusa figure it out that, hey, I don't have to turn the entire darn thing on. You know, I could turn on little spots, you know, on the only my four quadrants and go from there.
That's such a good idea.
Which now that leads me to a question. If since you have a printer that has multi-heads on it, this is something we probably should have asked person. It has multi-heads on it. You can print in multi different filaments. What if you want to print something in each four quadrant,
Oh, can you print at the same time? Yeah.
but can you print with different temperatures?
Oh. I feel like that would have some type of effect. There had to be some limitation on what material.
But that's kind of what I'm thinking. It's okay, cool. I want to print TPU here. I want to print ABS here. I'd like to print nylon here. You know, now the nozzle temperature is going to be a different, yeah, difference. Yes. But can I print one print and then say, okay, cool, I'm done with this, and let me move back one. Print the filament
Yeah,
that
I
I need to
mean.
print there. Then move over, print that one, then come up and print this one. Now, could they all or could it be like, hey, I'm printing this, let me move on the next layer on this one, then this one, to kind of move around a little bit? Oh, I don't think that would work, but work could.
Yeah, I just think when you're mixing a lot of these things too, like you're gonna need to find a similar. I think that is. I know you're saying different temperatures of the bed, but you'd have to calculate for differences in like heat creep across because it's still attached, like the bed's still attached. I mean, I think that's a cool idea though. Like for me, I print the same temperature. ABS as I did for I can't remember
Like
what was
ASA.
it, yeah, ASA. There was I think carbon fiber PETG as well, but yeah, I printed the same temperature for two different types of filaments, and the bed's temperatures were slightly different, but I feel like you could adjust that. The problem I'm like worried about is there is a bit of heat creep, and at a certain point, if you go too far, you may hit the point where another print would snap off the bed because it's too cold, even if it's still, at 70 degrees Celsius or 80 degrees Celsius or something like that.
Which makes sense.
I think it's a cool idea, though. I mean, we saw someone working on like printing, like we're talking about batch printing with binder jetting, right? Another unconventional printer was the, I can't even remember the name of the Creality one, but it was the one with the conveyor belt on it, right?
Oh, yeah, I was talking about.
So yeah, it's continuous 3D printing there. So if you're doing that, I mean, I think it makes sense to have, two units printing on the width of the print instead of focusing on just the center. You're not getting the same wear and usage out of the sides.
Yeah.
It's about continuous printing,
The conveyor belt printing is insane. They have the mods for the Vorons too, for belt fed, continuous prints and stuff like that. And you think about it, and that's what I kind of wonder is, it worth the squeeze, because they are expensive kits if you don't build them yourself. But the one that Creality has, you can actually adjust your angles a little bit. So you can adjust the angle in which you want to, attack this thing at, and that you want to print it at. So you can print, not just flat up and down things, but you can, I think they were printing with swords at one point. Cosplay swords. So, for me, it's like, for someone like that, if you're an organization that builds cosplay, or builds, historic reenactment stuff, something like that is absolutely insane. Like, you can the like, if you're building cosplay swords, if you have 3D printers that can print your entire sword as one run, the
Yeah, instead of doing like I have to, right now I have to have like a collapsible, and it's that's not the same quality as having a full unit
Yeah, and the
like
thing is, your
one.
output's completely insane. If you can make these entire batch prints, in one big thing, because if you think about it, cosplay and what is the new the, everybody dressing up as, the stormtroopers for charity now. You're seeing that come out a lot. I got a buddy of mine who does that. But the thing is, 3D printers in that atmosphere, to, large scale unconventional printers in that scale to support that type of event is, it's kind of a blur between the lines of, what is additive manufacturing per se. And I heard this term one day. It's called additive art. Where you're not building something off your 3D printer for an engineering purpose or for a purpose to be a functional piece. You're building a piece to that, supports an art project or a charity of some sort that you're building it for. So they called it additive art, because it's, not art in its typical sense, which kind of leads you to the printers of where do they get the guys who were printing with clay and, then kiln firing them. So, there's always that.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool idea too. Like if you're not able to make it, then you have the machine make it. And somehow get it into reality. It's the same people that, the same type of person that thinks about, what is it, lost PLA casting, just melting away the PLA and leaving the mold so that whenever you, pour in whatever type of element metal, that you want to use, you can have that in that medium, right? I think that's a cool idea.
It's something of how, 3D printers are being used in an environment which, they might not have been designed for. or thought about when the first printers were actually made. No one said, "Hey, guess what? I want to use this to build, a cosplay costume." It was, "Hey, I need to build this so I could print this part for my like Honda Civic because I broke something."
Like, yeah, I need to hang this on my wall. Hold on, I need to print this little hook.
Yeah, I don't think that was really the top of the conversation key here.
Yeah, even if that's what we use it for. I mean, that's what I use it for. I have
Yeah.
it's holding up some of my bookshelves. It's like got wall anchor mounts that I've printed. I've got curtain rod holders and things like that. It's all utility. But you still gotta leave room for some of the art. I mean, you gotta have some fun with some of the articulated things. Like I did print a katana, the retractable katana as well, and stuff like that. So yeah, I also kind of want one of those tall Delta printers because I want to be able to print that. Yeah, we want to be able to print that in one unit, or like the swords or stuff like that as well.
I think if you're into 3D printing, you want a Delta printer. I don't think there's not somebody out there that says, "I want to get into 3D printing." Okay, they see a Delta printer and the first thing goes, "Ooh,
That's
Spaghetti
cool.
Monster." It's a big alien with big long arms and it's printing stuff. Of course you want to play with it.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a cool mechanism, and Delta is how the motors and things like that move, because in a step system, like a normal Cartesian Core XY, anything like that, your motors are fixed in one direction moving, but for the Delta, it's still kind of fixed in one direction they can each control, but you can see it looks like it's variably moving diagonally very nicely with some of the hydraulics that it's got on the arms.
Yeah, and it's of course everybody looks at it and goes, "I wonder how fast I can build print a Vinci," and then of course you have some people go, "I wonder if I could print a dragon."
Nobody's gonna beat the Voron, the mini Voron 2.0 Benchy, the 3-minute ones.
You never know though, because these Delta
That's true.
printers have become so advanced. Even though they do look like a bunch of like a stick figure thrown, plastic in a bed, but it's just and it spins in circles.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And they're quite expensive, for what they are. But the thing is the height on the darn things. Yeah, we see it where it comes up and slowly fades out. You got these printers that are well printing over freaking almost 6 feet tall.
Yeah, we saw a couple at Rapid that one time as well.
Could you imagine that this is just theoretical here because I just think it's funny, is somebody's printing like giant yard gnomes.
Oh yeah, my sister-in-law's already asking for like giant the Shishi dog, the Chinese guard dogs people have on the edge of their driveway. She wants that, and I was like, that's too big. You're gonna have to cut it into small pieces to print, but if you had a big printer, well, why not?
Now, what about the lost P? What about doing that, but lost PLA casting?
Yeah, I think it would be a lot more difficult, but it's still doable. One thing I will say is do not inhale any of the fumes while you're burning out PLA.
Yeah,
Not
no.
good for you.
There's got to be a printer a pr a filament out there that it should be hopefully eventually designed for lost PLA casting.
Yeah, like pops it over. That'd be cool. I mean, it's a cool little focus, a cool little idea. It's a process that's very involved, which is why I can understand that not everybody's doing it. But yeah, I think it's the easiest thing, and it's like if you have any brass pieces, like what was it? Someone had, I think, like they were refurbishing their boat, and they couldn't get the brass, the brass handles and stuff like that were kind of like on the original boat. So they did lost PLA casting. Of course, it's not going to be the same original boat, but he's just trying to make it look like what it
There's no
used to.
issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and I hate to go back one step, going back to our Delta printers, but TPU. in Delta printers. I wonder how that would work.
Gotta have a good extruder.
But most of them are direct extruders.
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, it's at that point, it's the gears. How many gears? Like, how many teeth do the gears have? Like, what's the flexibility in the TPU? I don't think it'd be difficult, too difficult, but I think that at a certain point, if you put the filament on top and it's pulling it down, if it's not like an exact grip and movement and measured exactly as it should, you're gonna get some pulling and tearing and deformation on your prints.
I think the one thing that really confuses me about it is the movement of the printhead. The printhead on those printers is extremely violent. There's nothing artistic about it, the Delta printer printing. It's just 100% violence. It's kind of like the Voron turned up, because of how it moves. Yeah, it does have some, symmetry and stuff like that. It looks pretty cool when it's moving. But if you think about it, you're moving left, right, all these motors are moving. The amount of times that that filament can go to not Zilla by the time it even makes it there.
Yeah, this is why you need guides and things like that. I think that, I mean, you take the stepper motors away and you go to servos and you can solve some of these problems. I mean, at that point, I think that it's more of your G code than it is your printer, because the printer does what it's told,
Oh yeah.
right? So if it's being told to do these rapid jumps and movements to get the print finished, then that's what it's gonna do, even if it, is at a detriment that'll break the system. So I think at that point, it's your user has to take a little bit more of the responsibility and understanding how. I mean, you can adjust speeds of the motors, hopefully, to I mean, I don't see why you couldn't, to slow it down a little bit. However, when you do that, your print time doubles sometimes. So it's hard. You end up, if you want quality, you're gonna have to take and put a little time into it, or give it some time.
Yeah, I definitely want to get one eventually to play with it, at least a desktop one, if they even make desktop Delta printers anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
The only ones I've seen are like my height, and I don't need an almost 6 foot Delta printer in my house.
Yeah.
Even though I think it'd be hilarious, but others might not. So it's one of those things, but.
Yeah, take up the corner of your room.
Yeah,
I mean, but you could print like full statues.
you could. That would just be hilarious. You start hiding full statues of people in like clockers and stuff like that. So when they open the statue, they're sitting there staring them back at them.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that would make Halloween go by a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, well, that's the whole reason that my sister-in-law got the printers herself anyways, is 'cause of Halloween. So she would be reaching out to you to get full mannequins, I tell you that much.
You might have got
Skeletons
me
and
there.
things.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you might have got me
There
there.
you go.
You
You
know,
put Spirit Halloween out of
it
business.
might. They'll just take over the next 7-Eleven,
Right.
or
Well, they'll just buy your printers out.
Yeah, true. They,
They're like, oh, he's got a good idea here.
yeah, go with Spirit of Halloween. One business closes, Spirit of Halloween pops right back up. It could be November, and it's like, why is Spirit of Halloween here? Well.
They've got some masks to sell you, okay?
It's now Spirit of Christmas. It's rebranding.
Hey, it's the same thing when I was in Boston and I asked about why is Christmas tree shops open year round? Because Christmas comes around every year. That wasn't a good answer to me. I was like, what do you mean? It's a very limited time to be needed. What about the rest of the year? Like, do people just buy Christmas stuff in the middle of the year? Actually, that's a side rant right there. I was very confused.
Yeah, there's I could go into for days on that one, because we have a town and it where I'm from back in Florida where it's called Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
So
they would keep that shop in business.
Oh yeah, and then you go up to like Tennessee and you have Christmas shops that sell ornaments year round. It's, last time I checked, I'm not looking to buy a Christmas ornament in August.
Souvenirs, man.
I don't really th I don't think I've ever bought somebody a souvenir Christmas ornament.
Well, maybe no one's asked, but maybe people do want it, okay? I bet your mom would love
My dad would
it.
hate
Because he's got to put it up every year.
it. You gotta find a place to put it.
Yep,
So,
yep.
it's one of those things. It's just, and that's where it comes down to 3D printers. It's like, if you have a 3D printer you can use year round. And when you start dealing in this unconventional world,
It's
maybe.
pretty cool. I mean, people are just like, for me, like what I it goes back to what I said in the very beginning. Like, it's what people make things based on kind of the end goal or what they want to do. Like, if I'm trying to, make a whole bunch of custom cakes and stuff, if I can automate that, why wouldn't I?
Exactly.
Right?
I can
And
do that.
that's just gonna increase your it's gonna increase your output, which is gonna increase your the inflow of money, hopefully. So,
And
I mean, why not?
we have these unconventional printers because they are in use. There are people using them. There are people enjoying them, for what they are. Because I'm going to say this is, as long as I've been around, the additive manufacturing world for just, not too long, but long enough to know that, and we saw this at Rapid. Guess what you don't see? You don't see a very anybody that's really unhappy working in additive manufacturing because they're having fun dinkering with new technology, pushing the boundaries of what is manufacturing. So, and that's why I say that there's people out there enjoying these printers. They're not saying dreading working with them. Ooh, I get to go to work and play with a robot arm with a 3D printer attached to the end of it. Wonder how bad that's going to be.
Yeah, I think it's fun, but it comes with the different like issues. It's like, for me, I get a little worried sometimes around the robots, but it's about, just being careful, I guess. But yeah, no, it's still fun. I mean, you see these things accomplishing big giant tasks that you didn't even realize
Right.
that could be done like that.
You don't really see anybody too upset, and the thing is that's why, yes, the these printers, the unconventional printers, they have a price tag to them. A very hefty price tag for some of them. Binder jetting is hundreds of thousands of dollars. HP makes a couple that just print really like PLA glue. It looks like a light, what is it? Like a laser printer. But the thing is it's, and those are more or less like, people who are, doing stuff on a, a rapid process as far as, they get a lot of orders for this type of stuff and they're printing in color. It's like the guys who do the 3D scans of people and then 3D print them out of one of those machines. The thing is it's still, they're bought for a process, bought for a reason, and used for a reason. And the guys who are using them are doing great things with them. And I hope that people actually go out and look at that because some of these guys are doing some extreme things with some of these printers that they might not always think about.
I mean, that. How do you think we got to printing whole houses? People are like, why can't I make them bigger? Why can't I do this myself? I mean, you take a process like creating a house, and you take it from like needing like dozens of people to needing like six. You take a printing a rocket, you go from like hundreds of thousands of people to like maybe a couple hundred or a couple thousand to make that rocket. So it's 3D printing and in additive manufacturing itself is just driving this, but I mean, back to the same thing. It's really the people that are using it are just, so innovative that they're combining several things and making it work really well. I mean, there's so many
They're
more uses that I didn't know about,
answering their why. And I think that, that's the fun part. They're answering the why and the how come. And they're not just throwing money at a problem and hoping it sticks. They understand that it's the next generation of how we do things. You start seeing it from the CNC guys on YouTube, because they're playing with CNC machines, they're playing with freaking additive manufacturing. It's like if you start thinking about it, Melt.io, you start dealing with a laser, like a you're printing with a weld rod, and you're machining it out with a Haas CNC machine, that type of stuff. You start really changing the way of how we do things, and how we perceive part manufacturing, and adding strength and removing strength to parts.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's I don't
That's
I think the unconventional stuff was if it really very soon become conventional.
Yeah, I mean, look at how far additive manufacturing has come just by itself. So, I mean, I agree. It's something that we tend to like overlook how useful it can be because we have so much access to it now, but if we just think about just five years ago, it was so much harder to even do any of this. And I to me, 3D printing was an afterthought. So.
Yeah, and the funny thing is now, and I was like you, I never really put a lot of thought into the additive world. I heard about it when I was in the Marine Corps, of course. We hear about, hey, this is done using this technology. All right.
Like cool.
So what? Does it make it cheaper when I have to go buy it at the PX after I lose it for the first time? No. But the thing is that's when now it's one of the forefront things that I think about is, okay, cool, I have this problem. Can I print it? Can somebody print it? Can somebody make a business printing this? Because it's something that comes up probably 3 or 4 times a day, and it's like, why are we doing it this way? Can we make it this easier to reduce the workload on the operator? But that's here nor there. So you really start getting into like ergonomics and ergonomic management and stuff like that with 3D printers. That's a whole nother bag in itself. But it's just, I think soon we're gonna start seeing additive really come to light.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's already like a $2 billion industry. It's just gonna keep getting bigger as things get a little bit easier to obtain and easier to get the resources, more time spent into manufacturing and creating certain like even alloys like NASA made an alloy that's 1,000 times stronger than any other metals. It's something that like okay withstand in, that could withstand in space. So printing in space is a possibility. So things just continue to kind of chain off of each other. So yeah, even printing in zero gravity is crazy. So the printer on the International Space Station is something that I would say is unconventional.
Exactly. It's not something that everybody would think about. It's you got all this stuff coming up now. And I think finally people are no longer just saying, hey, look at the weird guy playing with a plastic extruder that's slinging plastic. It's more like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. It's now becoming to an idea that everybody's thinking about, not because they're more readily available, but it's because they understand the importance in it, and they understand that they don't want to wait for parts and they can just build it themselves. I got friends, we had this conversation the other day at the office. Is where it was actually last week. It's where they didn't think about 3D printing before after we've told them 9,000 times about it, but finally it something clicked. It said, hey, guess what, dummy, I got to do this. I finally think that that type of stuff is finally coming to fruition.
Yeah, it's hard to like force people to think about it, but at the end of the day, it's gonna come around sooner or later, so might as well, get used to what's kind of going on now, as opposed to being, sideswiped or surprised when it comes back later,
Yeah. But, I really think that, that's something that, we can definitely dive into a different day, I think. Because I think we've kind of hit the end of our discussion for today about unconventional 3D printers. And for me, I think that, the unconventional will soon be conventional. And I really think that we're going to start seeing the boom in things that are not, readily seen. Stuff that, we may not have thought about, 10, 15 years ago, that we're finally seeing today. So, with that, I definitely want to say thank you to everybody who's tuned in, everybody who, has made this weird, thing possible, for us to do this podcast, have a little bit of fun with it, and kind of, stretch our boundaries of stuff we've just usually probably wouldn't have thought about. Or even had some of these conversations if it wasn't because, we were just randomly throwing around a conversation and thought, oh, that'll work. But, we're up to what is it? I'm looking at it right now, 2,321 all-time downloads. And we're growing little by little, day by day, sometimes hour by hour. But, and I want to say thank you to every single person who, is actually constantly tuning in. We got y'all all the way across the pond. We see you out there. We see all the countries y'all are from. And, it's kind of a source of pride about how what new country we can get into next. Where we can get into next. We can have a little bit of fun with it. But, just go take a look at, what we're doing over there at Printed Heritage. Go take a look at that. Vulcanaur 3D, if you want some merch, we are going to be hopefully, getting that running soon. Go take a look at the blog. Hopefully when I get up to automate this year, I'll get some stuff written up and stuff like that, see what we can do. So I just want to say thank you. Turn it over to John, but y'all have a good one.
I kind of ditto. Always have to echo exactly what Nick's saying as far as the appreciative part of things. It's hard to ignore the fact that we have a platform to speak on, because usually these things are not heard by anybody. It's just kind of us talking to ourselves or talking to each other or something like that. So, if anybody wants to be included, anybody wants to join us, just reach out. You definitely have lots of ways to kind of call, email or chat with us, and we welcome those conversations. So, stay tuned for some of those things. Yeah, and get on. I know it's a little bit scary sometimes getting on Google Scholar or getting on any of these websites and learning about some stuff, but if there's anything that we said that you're curious about or don't know anything about or couldn't speak to in a sentence or in a conversation with anybody passing by, Google it. See what's going on and try to get some information. Check your sources, of course, but this is why we do this thing, knowledge for the sake of knowledge, just trying to kind of pay it forward. So just keep that, the forefront of your mind. But besides that, stay tuned. Keep an eye on, Printed Heritage, the blogs, things like that. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one.
All right, y'all. Have a good one.
That's all for this episode of Tech at Lunch. Thanks for tuning in and joining us for this tech-filled lunch break. We hope you enjoy the show. And don't forget to subscribe on all channels. And also, you can find us on YouTube under Vulcanaur Technology Solutions. And join us for our next episode, which gets published every Wednesday at 8 a.m. All right, y'all. Have a good one. See you later.